Philip II of Macedonia, Peace with Athens, Part 3. Now, it's taking quite a while, and as you can see, the negotiation process with all these people giving speeches and going back and forth is taking a little bit of time. But, of course, Athens' democracy conducted all of its public business in plain view to a degree rarely equaled in any large society. And, of course, this was a great source of pride, although it also meant that attempts to outmaneuver others during negotiations were transparent from the beginning. At Pella, everything was ultimately determined by Philip's decision, often made by him alone and in consultation with chosen advisors behind closed doors. The deputations from various cities and leagues waited nervously, suspicious that others knew more than they did. In particular, the Thebans worried about the presence of the Phocians and wondered whether the Thessalians knew more about Philip's plan than they did. None of them knew what Philip intended, while all realized that his will would be very difficult to oppose unless two or more of the great cities combined, and that was not likely. Sparta was primarily concerned with the Peloponnesus and the threat to her entire system posed by the freed helot communities established by Epaminondas during the years of the Theban dominance. Thebes wanted the destruction of Phocis, ideally in a way that restored her own dominance in central Greece. Each of them saw the other as more of a danger than Philip, and their attitude to Athens was similar. Philip came back from Thrace sometime in the second half of June 346 BCE, well content to find himself at the center of everything. The campaign had gone well in pressuring King Stenophilus to accept his place as subordinate ally once more and establishing some new forts to help maintain Macedonian dominance. Philip and the army now prepared for operations against Phocis, while Philip began to receive the waiting ambassadors. His precise intentions remained very opaque, and rather than speculate about these, it's better to see what actually happened before returning to the question. Listening to various deputations took time, and Philip was in a hurry to begin the war. Very soon, he and his army began the march south, and the ambassadors had to go with him and wait to be summoned. He received the Spartans and the Athenians early on. Philip had promised to release, without ransom, the Athenians captured at Olynthus in time for a festival later in the year, but had not yet done so. Alone with the 10 envoys, Demosthenes raised the matter, offering to pay a token ransom for their release. His colleagues were unimpressed, or so Asines later claimed, and the gesture was clearly meant far more for the audience at home than for Philip. Demosthenes spoke of the king being praised for his looks, drinking capacity, and memory, but said that such compliments were unworthy of him. To praise beauty was only right for a woman, the ability to consume wine fitting only for a sponge, and the great memory appropriate for the professional orator or sophist. Now, there's one version of this quote that always goes, and that is that Demosthenes said that Philip was a great drinker, and that's a great quality in a sponge, but not necessarily in a leader. That's how it kind of goes. Now, there was a lot of talking, a lot of speeches, some witty, mostly not. So far, the king and his allies had not taken the oaths required to complete the alliance with Athens. As this and other public decisions were delayed, rumor flourished, swinging between fear and hope. Some of the Athenians came to believe, in part because they wanted to believe it, that Philip aimed to break Theban power and was ready to turn against his ally in the Sacred War. The Thebans, in turn, felt excluded, fearing Phocis was about to be let off the hook so that their old enemy would remain a threat. Around this time, they raised an army in preparation for an attack on Phocis, and perhaps also as a reminder to Philip of their strength. Later, Demosthenes claimed that the Theban ambassador also took a tough line with Philip, refusing to be bribed and demanding that he fulfill his obligation as an ally and a military leader of his Amphrenonic army. According to the orator, the king gave in to the Theban demands, whereas he did not to the suppliant approach of his fellow Athenians, proving that Philip was a barbarian and a bully at heart, full of empty bluster. An important aspect of their cases in both confrontations was Asines and Demosthenes' differing portrayals of Philip. Demosthenes described Philip as a brooding presence, alien in every way to sound Athenian statesmanship and citizens. In contrast, Asines spoke of Philip, who was well-mannered, generous, and eloquent, all admirable aristocratic and Greek qualities. His Philip is still clever and cunning, backed up by subtle companions, which all meant that there was no shame if the ambassadors were misled. Demosthenes claimed that on their way to Pella for the first time, Asenes had dismissed Philip as a barbarian, and that he changed his tune only later, after being bribed by the king. Gift-giving was a normal part of diplomacy, of diplomatic exchange, and traditional hospitality. The accusations of bribery were common in Athenian political disputes, so this was probably no more than a routine abuse of an opponent. Another aspect of this was the portrayal of each other's behavior with the Macedonians. Asenes more than once explained that he and Demosthenes were never likely to be close because he drank wine and the other men only water. Demosthenes is nervous, alternating between hostility to and fawning attempts to befriend his fellow ambassadors, and ridiculous as well as misguided in his insistence on raising the issue of Athenian prisoners. Demosthenes accused Asenes of attending a sacrifice and a feast where the defeat of their Phocian allies were celebrated. The reply was that diplomats were expected to be diplomatic and accept hospitality from their hosts, that the feast was part of a wider festival entirely respectable and Greek, and that he had kept silent during the part when the victory was hailed. Another charge was that Asenes and his colleague had accepted dinner at the house of the son of an Athenian exile, one of the hated 30 tyrants who held power when democracy was suspended at the end of the Peloponnesian War. They were waited on by a young woman, a freeborn Olynthian of good family, now a slave, and treated her like an entertainer rather than a respectable woman. When she resisted, Demosthenes claimed that the drunken men stripped off her dress and had her flogged. Asenes maintained that his character was so well known in Athens that no one would believe any of this, and that the crowd had shouted his rival down when the accusation was actually made. Such rows came later, and for the moment, Philip, his court and army, made a brief stop in Pherae, where at long last he and the representative of his allies swore their oaths to confirm the peace with Athens. Delaying this while he held secret talks with all sides had suited Philip, and there was another slight delay before the Athenians set off to report home. So we finally get to the peace treaty, hopefully, because Athens still has to get it approved once they get back to Athens. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.